You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.
You are all about to get on this record. Getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces that you're going to get from one man right here on The Big Puzzle with your host, the one and only man from Canada, Mr. Barry Ritz.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to this Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting to the facilities of People's Internet Radio, and also being simulcast on ShakeAndWakeRadio.com. Shake and Wake's totally currently down, but they'll be up. Apparently by next week we'll have the station back up. We are a viewer-supported station, folks, so if you like what's going on over here, appreciate it if you could reach into your back pocket and throw a couple bucks into the kitty. I know the people operating the stations would much appreciate any help they can get. And as always, I love to say thanks to my producer, Steve Roberts, for putting up with me every week. Welcome to the show. You know, in today's world, it takes a lot of courage. And we're finding this more and more as time goes on. It takes a lot of courage to stand up against the evil we see perpetrating all sectors of our society. And today, it's my pleasure to have back to the show Kevin Johnson, a gentleman that has, let me put it this way, has reproductive parts bigger than an elephant, and that's being politically correct. Canada needs a lot more people that have the courage this man has. He's been through incredible persecution and personally sacrificed a ton of stuff here in the last couple of years. He's going to talk a little bit about that today and kind of give you an insight into what's going on in our judicial system in Canada. It's really kind of gotten out of control. Welcome to the show, Kevin, and it's a pleasure to have you back.
Barry, listen, I really appreciate you making that phone call to me and asking me to join you. It's a pleasure to be back. I don't think we've spoken on the radio for 10 to 11 months, somewhere in that range, and I am just so happy to be able to talk to the Canadian audience out there.
Well, I've been looking forward to this call this week because you're one of these people that I call a spark plug, Kevin, and you are. And like I said, it takes a lot of courage these days because we are being attacked left, right, and center. Even little guys like me, I'm starting to see major attacks on myself through the internet. It's everywhere, and it's ramping up right now at light speed. It's a time that we really have to put our foot down and say, we're not taking any more of this. And I'm hearing that echo across Canada right now, Kevin. What are you seeing going on?
What I'm seeing is this. The reality of what you and I have been talking about for the last 3 to 5 years is finally hitting home. And unfortunately, with people in general, it has to affect them before they'll care about it. Now, it's affecting everybody with this COVID nonsense. We'll call it the pandemic, but it's affecting everyone to the point where they're not eating, they're not paying rent, or if they are landlords, they're not being paid rent. People are broke, and I find that the moral and ethical code of the country is dying off very quickly because so many people are eager to get their hands on that spare $2,000 and actually realize that in some cases that's more money than they would make working, so they're not going back to work, further killing the economy. Now that people are out of work and are not going to be getting anything more than what we'll call universal income, it's affecting them in every way. Now they're listening to you and I. Now I'm hoping it's not too late, but you know, with how bad it is right now, it's right on the knife's edge there. It could drop either way. We could save it, or it could all just fall apart at this point.
I have to agree with you, Kevin. I think we're at a pinnacle right now. I don't think most Canadians really grasp the concept of how much trouble this country really is in right now, and how far it could go with very little effort by powers to be right now. They've got us in a situation. They unleash this, I call it the scamdemic, Kevin, because that's what it is. They unleash this on the public. They got the response from the public they wanted. If people think that this is ever going to go back to normal, they really do have their heads in the sand, because we've given these maniacs a new level of power over us that they've never experienced before. They're drunk with that power. Now the second wave is going to come. Now the third wave. And boy, you think this is bad. Wait till something comes along that's really got some knockdown power. And watch what they can do to society. To me, this has all been a conditioning. It is absolutely devastated our country, Kevin. Absolutely. And we're only talking about the economic situation in Canada. But what really it's impacting is our children that aren't allowed to go back to school. The rates of suicide have gone up across the board, across the country. Rates of domestic assaults, family violence, child abuse have skyrocketed across the country since we've been locked down like animals in our houses. Period. And that's something you'll never hear on CBC, Kevin, ever. Go ahead.
No, you're not going to hear it on CBC. First off, CBC, along with CTV, the Toronto Star, Huffington Post, National Post, they've all been bought off by the Liberal Party. I mean, if you remember the radio show that I did with David Menzies back in 2017, we both predicted before the bailout that there was going to be a bailout, and that is why every newspaper was pushing so much left-wing garbage on everybody, such as reducing the age of marriage and allowing anal sex to be taught to grade 4 students. I mean, all this nonsense that you would have got your butt kicked for back in the 80s was now becoming mandated by school boards and municipal and provincial governments. Well, we did say that, and you can go to my BitChute channel and you'll actually see David and I talk about that back in September of 2017. And here it is. Here it is that the bailout showed up to the tune of $700 million to all the left-wing media outlets. And then there are other outlets out there that I don't know how this happened, but there are left-wing outlets that watch people like you and people like me and David Menzies and Ezra Levant, and they write reports, and they send these reports off to police forces all over the country. So, Barry, I am being judged by police across this country based on reports that are being written by Antifa. Do you know who it is right now? It's called AntiHate.ca. This is a group of a few Toronto radicals. I mean, we are talking radical leftists that are anti-Christian, pro-ISIS. They are anti-education, anti-establishment, anti-capitalism. But for whatever the reason, they're okay with taking a whole bunch of capitalistic donations. You know, in a lot of cases, to the tune of $50,000-$60,000 a week, these guys are getting. In Toronto, it's Bernie Farber, who is Jewish, but he is an anti-Semite Jew. He is one that wants to see the destruction of Judaism and destruction of Israel. He is what you call a liar for hire. So if you feel like slandering a political opponent, and that political opponent happens to be conservative, well, this particular group will do just that. The other guy who runs it in Toronto is called Evan Balgord. This is the guy who's been stalking Faith Goldie for quite some time. He's sick. This guy is very, very ill in that he is so pro-pedophilia that I'm aghast. I'm disappointed to fly the Canadian flag when I realize that this guy's getting that much money every week to snitch on you and me to the police, and the police are accepting their documentation as fact. Now, the other guy who's a part of this nut job group is out more closer to you, not quite there, but his name is Kurt Phillip. He's out in Drumheller, and this is a guy that ran something called the ARC Collective, ARC Collective, Anti-Racist Canada Collective. It's a garbage blog where all he does is slander and libel anyone who has a Christian or a conservative viewpoint. That's it. That's all he does. And he was able to remain anonymous for quite some time. I believe it was this year he got found out because the Yellow Vesters had enough of all these lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits being filed against them. And it turns out that Kurt Phillips' name was one of the plaintiffs in one of these lawsuits, and that's how he was exposed. But Kurt Phillips, here's the worst part about this guy. He's a member of Antifa. He is pro-violence. He is anti-Trump. He is pro-pedophilia. He is pro anything to do with the destruction of the capitalist West, period. And he is a teacher in a Catholic school in Drumheller, Alberta.
Really?
Think about how crazy everything has become in this country, in that pro-pedophilia people can be teachers in the Catholic school system. And I've had the same problem out here with a teacher in Toronto. I exposed the teacher as a full-bore child molester, and instead of the police doing anything about it, the police dragged me into court under a peace bond threat. They said, you got to sign this or we're going to make sure you go to jail for quite some time. So there is a teacher in Toronto who's molesting kids that I can't talk about. And again, this teacher works for the Catholic School Board in Ontario. I am so disgusted by what this country has become to represent that I am making one big final stand. I'm running for mayor in Calgary because at least I get to say these things on the national stage, which right now I think, Barry, as you and I had discussed briefly, the Canadian government is not letting me do. They right now... There are 28 people in Canada, mostly politicians, that I am not allowed to speak about. That's all by court order. There are five political subjects I am not allowed to speak about. There is a select religion that exists within North America that I am not allowed to speak about. I am not allowed to leave the province of Ontario, and the police made it very clear. The Peel Regional Police in Mississauga made it very clear to me that they're not going to let me leave the province of Ontario, and they're not going to let me run for mayor of Calgary, and they do not want to ever see me in a position of political power. So the law, if you can call it that, has stopped me from speaking. Now, I'm not the only one that they're after. They are after others. But they've done their very best to silence me, and they're doing that because of two things. Number one, in January to June of 2017, my first YouTube channel exploded. And it exploded because I was saying things that Canadians have never heard before. I got to something like 2 million subscribers, and the Canadian government went right after me, and they shut that YouTube channel down.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of celebration in the Liberal Party. They were all clapping and cheering that my account had been shut down. Then they killed my Twitter account and they killed a Facebook page. And they even there was DDoS attacks on my website and so on. To go further with that, I placed second in the Mississauga mayor race in 2018. And I did that on a budget of $8,500. And that scared the hell out of them. That terrified them. I finished second. Here's the efforts that they put forward to sabotage my campaign. Number one, Bonnie Crombie, the mayor of Mississauga, hired Antifa to harass me in Needley. So they actually went after some of my volunteers. So I lost some of my volunteers based on the fact that they had eggs thrown at them. Antifa sabotaged not one but two of my cars. They're both old used vans that I purchased really cheap, but they were still sabotaged. High-end video camera stolen, a laptop stolen, a microphone in the stand stolen. I was assaulted twice, and the second time Antifa assaulted me, it actually cost me my right knee. I had to have that knee rebuilt in surgery. This is how far Bonnie Crombie wanted to go to send a message that I should not be running, and I still finished second. There were more things that she did. She had a number of election booths shut down at the schools. The lights were turned off, and they claimed that they were having power failures, power problems. They didn't have any signs up to show where people could vote. And she had made a demand of the Mississauga News, Toronto Star, and a few other local newspapers here that they were not allowed to cover me. They were not allowed to give me any press whatsoever. It has been completely and totally out of control with all the attacks that I've had to face. Antifa has actually assaulted me now 5 times. Once assault cost me my left ear, once it cost me my right knee. This is how, this is our country right now. And they kind of sound like Hitler's brown shirts, don't they? So now what they are is they are essentially Bonnie Crombie's and the Liberal Party's brown shirts. They will, please look that up, everyone. Do your Google search on Hitler's brown shirts, and you'll find out how easy it was for extremist left-wing ideology to take over an entire country. That is what's happening now, Barry. And
yeah, I know.
Just the beginning.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I urge people to study history, Kevin, because it's very important that you understand what has happened in the past. And if you take a look at what was going on in Germany in 1935, folks, you'll see almost identical carbon copy to what's going on in our society today, almost word for word, with the exception of the advances in technology. It is the exact same program being played out right now that Hitler played out in 1935. He controlled the media. He controlled the youth. He turned the youth against their parents. Everything he did, Kevin, you can see in society today. And you are right. Our country is in so much trouble right now. I never thought in my lifetime, Kevin, that I would see this until I really started going down the rabbit holes, you know, years ago. And I realized that this time was coming. We've been talking about it for years, Kevin. People on the internet that we have done shows with for years knew that this was coming, and now it's here. The question is, how are we going to deal with this? Because we have got a pile of problems right now. Where do we start? And I'll tell you what I think after I get your comment.
Okay, well, here's my comment. Number one is we have to identify a very serious problem in this country. Now, I'm not going to talk about the ideology in general. I'm not going to talk about COVID. I'm not going to talk about that. Let's talk about a basic one, is that we have zero, with the exception of you, me, Ezra Levant, David Menzies, and about 10 others, we have zero masculine men in this country. The complete emasculation of men has done its job. It has made every single male, I'm not going to use the word man, but every male in political power right now, weak and pliable like plasticine. They will do exactly what they are told, and they won't raise a stink in any way. Now, if you want a prime example of that, look at our Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, who started off really strong. He punished the Toronto City Council for giving his brother a tough time by reducing city council to half the number of councillors. And that was the only masculine thing that he did. Everything else that he's done since then has been to appease the Liberal government. And now what he's done is he's been turned on America. He's turned on Donald Trump, and he's turned on the United States, stating that he now agrees with the Liberal Party that Trump's tariffs on our aluminum is a bad thing and that we should punish the Americans and so on. Hey, there is no way for us to punish the Americans. What these people are dreaming, if they think the Americans care about tariffs going on their products, they'll just sell their stuff to the United Kingdom and to India instead of us. It doesn't matter. We don't have any masculine men who can take charge and put people in their place that need to be put in their place. We have no masculine men who will rise up and draw their sword and charge forward into the gunfire. None, except for, again, you, me, and a few others that will do that. Problem is, you and me only have power so far as we can reach an audience. So that's our big problem. There's no men willing to be men and fight the fight that needs fighting. They're not even fighting the fights they can win. They're not fighting at all. They have just, in complete and total unison, surrendered unanimously across the board. So what do we do? We have a conservative party right now who has only one guy who's speaking the truth, Derek Sloan. And, of course, Derek Sloan is subject to the same thing I was subject to, which is he is being completely shunned and blocked out by the media, and the average Canadian isn't smart enough and isn't interested enough in politics to understand how detrimental that really is to the country. So you've got guys like Aaron O'Toole who they want to be the next prime minister. Aaron O'Toole's running mate is a member of a select ideology and a select group that wants to destroy this country. What the hell are you thinking? What are we all thinking even listening to Aaron O'Toole? We don't have any men left, man. So until we get masculinity back, until more things crash and it gets harder for men, we're not going to have any men that rise from the ashes yet until there actually are ashes. And I hate to say it that way, Canada, but let's do it this way. And let me be very brazen in my statement. If you do not put me in office in the city of Calgary as its mayor so that I can say these things on the international stage, during the actual election, I can say it nationally. But while I am mayor, I can say it internationally. If you don't put me in there to be able to do that, the country is done, because no one else is going to say the things that I say. And that's a promise.
So them restricting you to Ontario right now, Kevin, how are you going to get around that? I mean, you want to run for a mayorship in Calgary, and yet you're forced to stay in Ontario. Are you going to challenge these restrictions, or what's going on?
Oh, yeah, we're fighting the restrictions. My lawyer's already on the restrictions that were put in place because they're all completely unconstitutional, and they are illegal. And when the opportunity arises to do so, we will be filing criminal charges against the police officers and the Crown attorneys that made this happen. They have broken the law. The only problem is there's not going to be any judges in Ontario that will let me win. But I guess at this point I'm going to have to settle for this. We won't get convictions. We're only going to get the charges to go through. Hopefully that's enough to send a message. You know, I'd like to have it stated that police officers involved in sabotaging not just one political campaign of mine, but two, have been charged with election tampering, election interference.
Right.
Let's see what happens there. I am more interested right now. I'm not into revenge and not nonsense. I'm more interested right now in getting the conditions thrown out so that I can get out to Calgary and start my campaign properly. Because I was in Calgary, as you know, 2 years ago, and I was blown away at how bad the city has become. I mean, we interviewed more than 50 people right downtown in one afternoon. And it turns out that only two of them were working. It was two young ladies in their mid-20s. But it had taken them over 8 months. So no, it was 11 months. I'm sorry, my mistake. 11 months to find the jobs that they had. And then in talking with them, they were angry about the fact that there was no work. And they were angry about the fact that it took them so long to find these jobs. But that anger disappeared as soon as I started asking questions about the destruction of masculinity in the country. So these two angry girls, all of a sudden, they got really happy when I asked them questions like, do you want to see grown men my age in my 40s walking into work with a beard, high heel shoes, a dress, and lipstick? And then she says, oh, well, why not? He's expressing himself. Ha ha ha. So we have a real problem with the way that we think here, too. On one hand, you've got women who want jobs who are angry that there's not enough masculine men in the country to force the economy into a good kickstart. But at the same time, they're okay with men not being masculine and dressing up like women to go to work in the same jobs that take them 11 months to find. I mean, what are we all thinking, Canada? Where does this type of thought process come from? And honestly, and I really would like an answer from this if anyone out there wants to give it to me. How do you feel that thinking this way benefits you, benefits your family, benefits your community, your city, province, and country? And here's the worst one. How does it benefit your future? Let's think about that. Now, if you've got an answer, I got to hear it because you're smarter than I am. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, anybody does want to call in, hey, Kevin, I can give a number out here. Anybody wants to talk to Kevin, you can call 269-409-1950, and we'll put you on there for a minute if you want to make a question. I'd love to hear from the audience. Yeah, Kevin, everything you just said was I couldn't agree with more, but, you know, that's only the tip of the iceberg of what we're dealing with in Canada right now. What we really, really need to do is get control of the police forces in Canada again. We need to call out the RCMP. That my call out in this country right now would be to any RCMP officer that has the intestinal fortitude to actually stand up to the law, lose his job, lose his career, but save the country. And I honestly believe that there's a few out there, Kevin. I really do, because I've had conversations with RCMP. One in particular I played hockey with last year, and I got to know the guy. You know, he's not a bad guy. He's got his family. He's done his thing. He's in there for the right reasons. But he said to me, Kevin, and he said this right to my face, he says, you know, the boys in the detachment, and this is his words to me, are disgusted with the criminal activities going on at the upper echelons of the RCMP. So they're fully aware of what's going on, but they're kind of caught, some of them, between a rock and a hard place. So I guess my call out would be to some law enforcement in Canada that will actually enforce the law, because if there was, Justin Trudeau would be in jail tomorrow. Kevin, you know that, and I know that. But how well this man is protected now by the police forces, by the RCMP in this country, is a major concern, should be a major concern to everybody. Go ahead.
Well, it absolutely should be, because the RCMP, look, I'm sure we have Americans listening. I'll explain it very quickly here. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police is the most unusual police force in the world, and it's the only type like it in the world. You'll find that, let's use America as an example. You've got your sheriff for your county, and then below him he's got his lieutenants and his deputies and just regular officers. And they have one select area that they go to, but then you move up one to the state police, and then you'll move up to their federal police, which would be the FBI or the NSA if there's some type of a national security threat. But the FBI would never hand out a parking ticket, and the FBI will not police anything that at the state level that the state police would police. Whereas the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they act as bodyguards to the reigning monarch, we'll call it, the reigning prime minister, but also they are a federal police force, a provincial police force, a regional police force, and a town police force. They will police wherever there are no other police detachments or other police departments. So you could get a parking ticket from a federal police officer in a municipality. It's a really foolishly designed police force. Now, the only argument that I would have for it to exist that way is Canada is a very big land mass, so it would be impossible for all these hamlets and towns of 5,000 or less to afford their own police departments with cars and jails and whatnot. So I understand that. But they have been ordered by the Liberal Party to stand down on any type of policing against the Liberal Party or any supporters thereof. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police are not even allowed to arrest Antifa members in Ottawa. They turn a blind eye to it, and then they'll say to the Ottawa police, hey, yeah, you guys go ahead. If you want to, you can arrest them. They're not involved in any aspect of saving the country, period. They've been told to stand down, so they have stood down. But how do we get the officers who are disgusted like we are, and I know that there are quite a few, how do we get them to act? I don't have the answer. I mean, I think in many cases, these police officers who want to do something, they're seeing the country the same way, Barry, that you and I are, and that is a sinking ship. So they might be just looking to protect their salaries just a little bit longer while they still have one, and while we actually still have a dollar functioning as a currency that's valid.
Well, I guess it would come down to a question of conscience then, wouldn't it, Kevin? I mean, if you have a conscience and you see what's going on in this country and you want to be part and parcel of it as an RCMP officer, well, what can I say to that? But I believe that there might be a few out there that really do have a heart, that truly do love the country and are willing to sacrifice for that. And I'm really hoping that happens, because you're right. The RCMP are a completely controlled entity. Brenda Leckie, I mean, you look at her, you look at her past. I looked into her past. I studied her past, her connection to Bill Monroe, all the family connections, her connection to the Council of Foreign Relations, the fact that she actually attended a Bilderberg meetings at one point in her life speaks volumes about what this woman is all about. Handpicked by Justin Trudeau, there was 10 people more eligible for the position, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, because of his general neutral position, he appointed this lady and gave her a big kiss. It is so sick to see in our country that we don't have a law agency that will actually enforce the laws of Canada, unless you happen to be a citizen, Kevin. And then they'll ram it down your throat. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, as much as I want to see more citizens' arrests taking place, we know that after the arrest takes place that there's no judge out there that will allow the prosecution to take place in their courtroom. We know that. There is a very big fear that I've seen now in the court system, because as you may have heard, the Ontario government and the Canadian government's put me into court 142 times in the last 3 years. So I've learned a lot with all those appearances. Judges don't want to make new case law. They don't want to put their names on this stuff, because just like the RCMP officers that we just spoke about, they want their salaries, because I think they see what's coming. And what's coming, it's possible that the Canadian dollar is in its last few years of existing as a currency. We may have to consider joining the European Union, which, believe me, that happens, I'm gone, or take on the American dollar, which wouldn't be that bad a thing for us. But when a currency dies, what do you do with all your savings? I mean, your savings have to go somewhere. Probably a lot of it's going into oblivion. And their jobs will not be stable. And when a currency crashes, well, the police departments go first, and the hospitals and emergency departments like fire and ambulance, they go next. And then you've got your court system. It breaks down immediately. They're not going to have jobs. So I think judges are seeing what's coming up, and that's why they're all staying quiet on select things, trying to avoid making new case law. And to give you an idea here of what I mean about case law, for those who don't know, I announced that I was going to be running for mayor of Mississauga back in 2017, and a couple of weeks later, the Peel Regional Police were at my front door arresting me for hate speech, as they call it. That was just Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie trying her best to get me not to run against her because I smoked her in debates 4 years earlier.
Right.
And she's not a debater. Now, with that arrest in place, it's been 3 years and I still haven't had a trial. And I'm not getting one until next year, it seems.
You'll be under all these restrictions until you go to trial, is that correct?
Well, yeah, but we have to get rid of the restrictions, me, because they're completely illegal, and we'll call them unconstitutional. They're really against the charter, but let's see what we can argue there.
Right.
Getting back to the point, though, that I want to make is I have seen, or this charge they put on me, I was the sixth person in Canada to be charged with hate speech under Section 319, Subsection 2, which is willful promotion of hatred. And now they have a hell of a case to prove here. They really do. They have to prove that I was deliberately inciting hatred. Good luck. There's no one's inside of my head. They don't know what I was thinking when I made videos. But what I do want to say on that is there's no case law because there have been two people that were convicted on it, but both times they appealed and both times the appeals went through. That's why you don't see like an R.V. Wade, you know, with reference to hate speech. There is no case law on it, and no judge really wants this stupid hate speech trial because they're going to have to make case law. And when you do make case law, you're kind of responsible for everything that happens afterwards as a judge.
Right.
So at any rate, the last guy that was convicted of it was James Sears. He ran a really funny, satirical, conservative newspaper in Ontario. And the judge, it was the sloppiest work I'd ever seen on behalf of any judge, who was in a real hurry to convict James Sears and then sentence him to a year in jail. James is a clever guy, though, this guy, and he managed to appeal it from inside the prison, got himself out of prison in 6 days, and his appeal hearing comes up in October. So if his appeal goes through, and his appeal wins, then we know that Section 319 of the Criminal Code has no weight. And at this particular point, I'm at a loss as to really understand. Aside from the Liberal Party and extremist left-wingers who want hate speech laws in place to silence people like you and me, I don't think the average person really wants to have these stupid laws on the books. I really don't think judges want them on the books because it forces them into really bizarre positions where you have a law that goes exactly against what the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says. It's exactly opposite.
Right.
So when you're a judge that wants to convict someone on that, you've opened yourself up, the region up, the court up, and the province up to massive lawsuits on that because of the illegalness of the charge in the first place.
Well, so
let's see what happens here. You know, Barry, it's been an interesting 3.5 years for me. Maybe what I'll do is recap for you. It cost me a knee. It almost cost me an ear. You know, it cost me a video camera, two vehicles, a computer. What else do we have here? It cost me any chance that I'm ever going to have to be able to work in this country. I did get a job in 2 years ago now, and somebody in Mississauga City Hall, at the behest of Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, made a phone call to my employer and said, this guy's a racist and so on, and they fired me for it. I sued them for it, but they fired me for that, just because somebody doesn't want me to live a comfortable life. So obviously I can't find a paying job in this country that's not maybe shoveling garbage or, and being down in a sewer.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've done their best to take absolutely everything that they can from me, which they've taken everything that they can. There's nothing left to take aside from my life. Well, I guess at this point, there's nowhere for me to go but up. And that's why I'm glad to be speaking on your show about what's happened to me, because I don't want sympathy. This is not me. I do not want any of you feeling sorry for me. What I want you instead to do is get angry, because if they can do it to me, they'll do it to Barry, and they'll do it to Rebel News, and they'll do it to anyone else who decides to argue against having a socialist, Marxist, communist, Sino-fascist government in Canada, which we're just about there on anyway.
We're getting close to it. We're getting close, Kevin. We really are. And, you know, it terrifies me. It terrifies me for the future of my children. And you're right. Where are the Canadian men with fortitude? What happened to our country? Our forefathers, Kevin, are rolling in their graves. They died for what we got, and we're giving it away like it was candy, man. I don't have the answers, Kevin. I sit back, and I'm just dumbfounded that Canadians are willing to let this happen. Normally will not let this happen and not stand up against it. If they, I think if people really knew the implications of what was coming, if they could see the results of their inactivity right now, if they could see the results of that 4 years down the road, and we could put that on TV somehow, you'd see an uprising in this country. We'd stir the hearts. But you're right, there's so many Canadians that they just, people I talk to, they just don't seem to care. That they're too busy watching. Oh, wait a second. Hockey's back on, Kevin. Everything's fine, man. You know, they had to bring along another distraction, didn't they, at this most critical time in our history. These guys have got it all figured out. But, yeah, we are in trouble, Kevin, and I don't have the answers. All I know is I've got to keep trying to wake people up. I know they're going to come after me, even little guys like me. They're going to come after me in the very near future, but I won't stand in fear. They're going to have to put a bullet in me to shut me up, and I know you feel the same way. So we have our hands full, but I don't think we've lost it. I honestly believe, and I've got to believe in the spirit of the human being in Canada, that enough people will see what's going on and see the absolute danger that's coming, and they'll get active. If not, we're going to lose this thing, Kevin, and I hate to say that, buddy, but we're going to lose it.
Yeah, we are going to lose it. So like I said, Kat, you want that one last stand that we talked about here. You got to make sure that everybody knows who I am, what I've been through, and why. But also let them all know that I am running for mayor of Calgary. I want to put forward my best effort there. Calgary is pretty much the last real conservative city left. Calgarians don't want free stuff. They want jobs. They want to work. They want their parties back. Calgary used to be party central in this country. They want their stampede back. They want to stop wearing masks. They don't want to be dictated to by the shill that they have in there now.
Yes, he is.
Oh, God.
No, I know. I know. I can't say what I want to say either.
Well, he walks around in his purple mask, and what he's doing out there in Calgary is telling everyone to listen to him, or they're going to get egregious fines and they'll be over-the-top ridiculous punishments. Naheed Nenshi is their current mayor. He has done everything he can to destroy that city. I mean, I guess if his goal was to destroy the city, then we have to congratulate him. He's taken that place from 5% to 25% unemployment in his time there. And I'll tell you this, and this is where I'm a little disappointed in Canadians as well. You got to stop falling for the race card. He comes out before the election and says that if Calgarians don't vote for him, they're racist. And of course, you know, white people in this country, they say, oh my God, you know, punch me in the eye, steal my car, rape my wife, do whatever, but don't call me racist. That's a mentality, Canada, that has destroyed this place. And you have to stop thinking that way. If you don't vote for Naheed Nenshi, who at the time had destroyed the city already, then that's on you for listening to his nonsense. You should not have voted for him. There were certainly better candidates out there who actually like human beings and who actually like the city and actually want you to succeed. And you voted for the one who hates you. You voted for the one who mocked you openly. When someone says, if you don't do what I say, you're racist, They are mocking you, laughing at you. Don't be the butt of the joke of someone who wants to manipulate you with accusations that we all know are false. If you're not a racist guy, then you know you're not racist. It doesn't make a difference what Naheed Nenshi says. He doesn't care about you. He wants the $200,000 per year paycheck and the bribes that go with it and the favors that he can get from whatever brotherhoods out there that he might be doing business with. That's what Naheed Nenshi's all about. Don't fall for it. Understand that, look, I'll say it again. Understand that I want to see the country return to the way it was in the 80s. And when I say that, I mean where people were tough, you could have opinions, comedians were actually funny, TV wasn't bad, hockey was a little higher quality only because players were allowed to say what they wanted, Don Cherry wasn't being censored, and the Calgary Stampede was the best party in North America. These are things that I want to see come back. Now, Ontario is lost. I don't care what anyone says. The province of Ontario will take 150 years of hopefully five or six super strong masculine guys to get in there and take charge and fix it. But it's lost. It's done. There's nothing anyone can do to save it. Alberta can be saved. There is a shot to save it. And you need to make sure that if you're not going to vote for me, at least don't vote for Naheed Nenshi. Look at the other candidates who are going to be there. I know two of them already. I've met two of them face-to-face, and we've actually had very good conversations. And if someone was looking for an alternate to me and to Naheed Nenshi, I would be honest and tell you which one it is. So let's put me in office, because you're going to hear conversations like this taking place every single day. There will finally be a politician in this country in a position of power and influence who is telling the truth about the way things are and also telling you how you can fix them. All right, so Alberta can be saved, but you got to put me in office for that.
Well, we'll have to come there and be your campaign manager then, Kevin, because I'd love to see you in power in Calgary, because you'd rock the boat, and the boat really needs to be rocked right now, or we're all in the Titanic right now, and a lot of us are screaming iceberg, but unfortunately, main passengers on board are still asleep in their bunks. So, hey, all I can say, Kevin, is you have my support 100%. We need conservative voices all through government right now. You're right. I've talked to so many people about Ontario, Kevin, and I grew up in that province, buddy, and it was a great place to grow up. My memories of Ontario when I was 10, 15 years old, 20 years old, back in the 60s and 70s, it was one of the greatest places in the world. And now I look at it, and it saddens me to see what's happened. You're right. I don't know if we can save Ontario, but I'll tell you, Western separation is something that is a major conversation on a lot of people's minds right now out west. That Western Canada is getting to a breaking point, Kevin. You know that. So maybe your timing right now is critical. Yeah. Well, you know that. You know that.
You're aware of course of that. I know that. Barry, let me tell you this. I mean, I would be the first one to tell Albertans, split and make a deal with the Americans. Split. Sell your oil, sell your potash, sell your diamonds, sell whatever you got. Sell every single thing that you have in that province, which is plentiful, I might add. You're never going to run out of trees. You're not going to run out of cows. You're not going to run out of oil. You have so much of it. Sell it to the USA. Do business solely with the USA if you have to, because they will buy what you have when you're not behaving like the Liberal Party is now, doing a tit for tat and arguing and throwing insults at the president and insults at the current administration. There is no way to succeed with America by insulting America, and that is all that our leadership is doing right now. With Alberta, I'll say this also, that these equalization payments, they got to go. So Albertans have got to make the decision that they no longer want to have a penny of their money go to Quebec. Now, I'm sure everyone remembers Quebec threatened to separate. There have been two referendums out there, and the last one was won by one vote, or 1% of the vote, sorry. 51% of Quebecers said they wanted to stay in Canada. And then I stopped and thought about that. You know, would it matter if Quebec left? And I had to say, well, a little bit, because they would have control of the St. Lawrence River. But I think at that point they would have lost a ton of money because there was no more equalization payments coming out of Alberta. So what is it now? I think it's $480 million a year that the Alberta government is just giving to Quebec. Now, I'm close to Montreal. I'm 5 hours away. I love Montreal. And when I go to Montreal and Trois-Rivières and Quebec City, everyone is having a party. They're all sitting down, and they're in their cafes, and they're having $14 glasses of wine and having a great time. But you're paying for it, Alberta. So with Quebec, they have as many trees as you do, if not more. And Quebec has the ability, with all the snow fields they have, to put in so many windmills and solar panels that they could actually make money on it if they put their effort into it. What Albertans need to do is split, become their own country, have American investment dollars fly into the place and stop giving Quebec a dime and force Quebec to make its own money, to go out and exploit its own resources, to maybe even consider putting tolls on the St. Lawrence River because, well, they would make a fortune doing it. I mean, it works for the Panama Canal. You know, Mexico is talking about making their own canal to make some money. Make some money on what you got, but do it yourself. Don't ask Calgarians to pay your way. Don't ask Edmontonians to pay your way.
Well,
that is why Alberta has to consider this. They have to consider saving themselves because they are on the verge of just not existing at all.
Yeah, suicides in Alberta have gone up about 300% here, I think it is, in the last 5 months, Kevin. It's absolute. The people in Alberta are proud people that they've always wanted to work for a living, and they're proud of their heritage. And now they're on their knees. And like you said, the sentiment to separate from the rest of Canada is growing very strong. I can see that being a possibility in the future. One of the bandages we could put on it right away is allowing a pipeline from the west to the east. So they're not giving Saudi Arabia, I forget the exact figure, I think it's about $9 billion a year, buying their oil when we've got more oil in Canada than we can ever use. And we're not buying Canadian oil and buying Saudi oil. I mean, there's a bandage that could be put in right away that would release a lot of sediment. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, let's cover two right now. Saudi Arabian oil is combat oil. No matter how you look at it, it's combat oil. Plus, it's Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia hates us. They're looking to destroy us in every way imaginable. And for those who also do not know who I am and what I've done, I've seen the end result of what Saudi Arabia has done in Asia in conjunction with Bangladesh and Pakistan, where they are sending Bengalis from Bangladesh into Myanmar to create havoc, to just absolutely destroy the country and try to take it over, which they're also doing in Tibet and Nepal and in northeast India. And this is being funded by the money that we and the Americans give to them for their oil. Let's just stop using their oil and let's use Canadian oil.
Exactly.
The only way to get that to work, is for Alberta to separate and build a pipeline straight south. That's how it works. Because okay, Quebec, they really do want to spend Alberta's money on their own infrastructure and their own good times. But at the same time, they say, no, you cannot put your oil thingy through here, eh? No, you cannot do that. No, no, no. So, you can't have it both ways. If you want free money, you've got to let the person giving it to you make some. So forget it. I don't think there is any way to reasonably bring back a sense of reason to anybody in a position of power within Canada. So Alberta has to go it alone. But Jason Kenney ain't the right guy to man that. He's just not. He's not man enough. He's not masculine enough. He's not tough enough, mean enough.
He's a noodle.
Oriented enough.
Yeah, he's a noodle. That's what he is. He's another duck for him. They all are, Kevin. They get into power and everything changes. You know, they make promises left, right, and center. Like you said, Doug Ford is a good example of that. I had hopes in that guy when he got in. And now, of course, he's really showing his true colors. But we see the same thing with every politician, buddy. Doesn't matter who they are or when they get in. The only one, like I've said, that I kind of am really paying attention to is Derek Sloan. Because everything he's saying right now really represents true conservative values, and we've lost that in Canada. I doubt if he'll get in, but boy, he would rock the boat if he did, for sure. Well, I guess you knew there was quite a few people on the streets in Montreal yesterday, Kevin. Did you get the exact numbers? Because I've heard quite a few different stories. I've heard up to 100,000 people were on the street yesterday. Then, of course, CDC reported it was 10,000. Huh?
Well, from the photographs I saw, it looked to be the better part of between 80 and 100,000 people. The media would say something stupid like 5,000 people. I don't even care what the media has to say. What I do know about Quebecers is that they're fed up with this stuff. Like, people in Quebec, they view their good times as a God-given right. No matter how you, Quebec is a very irreligious society, but they are a very party-esque society. And when you are when you're getting in the way of a Quebecois' privilege, his right to have a glass of wine and some brie and whatever else he might want to eat that day, you're in for a fight. Quebecers are the only ones who really do fight in this country, and they will fight to preserve what they have. And regrettably, even the Bloc de Quebecois, who came out and boldly stated during the federal debates, he said that he was running for Quebec. He didn't care about Canada. Like, that's a pretty brazen statement to make, and of course they got enough seats to make a difference. But they're not helping the provincial government get away from this stupid United Nations mandate to keep everybody wearing masks and keep everybody 6 feet apart. How is it that you would expect the nightclub and the pub and the bar industries and the entertainment industries out there to ever bounce back? Entertainment is something human beings absolutely require.
Yes,
dancing, human beings should be doing. You know, hugging and kissing and high-fiving and being in large crowds watching sporting events and cheering. This is what we're supposed to be doing, and we're not doing it. And Quebecers, we got to give this to them. They are willing to show up in numbers like that and fight for that right. Whereas in Toronto, the same type of event, the anti-mask events, get about 250 people. And this is a problem, Canada, when you have nobody willing to come out and fight for their own rights. If you had a look at what happened in Berlin and
that was impressive. That was impressive.
And Munich and Leipzig and a few of the others. I mean, every major city on the west side of Germany is left. Everything from the old East Germany block, they're right of center. All of these cities had hundreds of thousands of people protesting. Poland, you know, we had Krakow, we had Warsaw, we had Budapest out in Hungary. We had all these cities with hundreds of thousands of people coming out. Toronto, population 6 million if you count the suburbs. 250 people show up, and they only show up for about an hour and a half, and they go do whatever. I don't even know what the hell they're doing. What are Torontonians doing that's got them so busy during a pandemic where everything is closed that they can't show up at Queen's Park downtown and protest that their lives have been destroyed? Really?
It is sad, isn't it, Kevin?
Somebody please phone into the show and tell me what Torontonians are doing. I live here, and I can't think of anything that they're doing. That's going to keep them away from fighting for their rights. I will say, go ahead, Barry.
No, it's just sad. I agree with what you're saying. Go ahead, Kevin. I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's just sad. You're sitting here and you're saying this. You know, we've got this scandemic coming to our country from communist China to the World Health Organization dictating to us how we're going to live our lives. We've totally destroyed our society. We've destroyed the economy of the country. We've turned our world upside down over something, and I urge people to do this because I released this and I put it out there. It's a chart between the 2019 influenza in Canada and the 2020 coronavirus up to the same date, August the 5th. And the numbers, Kevin, are identical with the exception of the fact that the flu virus is actually doing more damage. But we did nothing in 2019. But you look at the power of the mainstream media and what the World Health Organization has done to Canada, that we're listening to these people. These people are being run, folks, by the Communist Chinese Party. They put the leader of the World Health Organization in place, and they're calling this a pandemic. What, Kevin, remember it came out, buddy, and it came on the news, and 10 days later, the World Health Organization was calling it a pandemic. Trudeau came on TV and said 50,000 to 350,000 Canadians are going to die, and everybody ran and hid underneath their couches. And yet, what are we seeing in Canada? 9,000 deaths? Come on, folks, wake up. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, those numbers are inflated, by the way. I've got friends that work in healthcare in Southern Ontario, and I, of course, have been into every major hospital in Southern Ontario now with a video camera, and I've got it all documented with the days and the times that I was there. And I walked through these hospitals, first off, without a mask on, and I told them all the same thing, that it's two things. I have a health condition that prevents me from covering my mouth like a fool, and due to the Ontario Human Rights Commission, whom I hate, but due to Sections 4, 4.1, and Sections 9, I have the right to live according to my creed, which is your religion, your fundamental beliefs on life, and that for me as a Christian, it sounds hokey, but as a Christian in this country, I was raised Christian. I'm not a hardcore fundamentalist Christian, but I do appreciate Christian culture. And I'll say this, according to the Bible, that wearing the mask is the mark of the beast. Now, I'm not asking anyone to think for a second here that I'm going to start praying or I'm going to start reading scriptures. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm doing here is that my creed, my religion, forbids me from joining any type of a cult as such. There are rules in Hinduism and Buddhism, not exactly the same thing, but there are statements in there that you cannot be forced into things like this. So your creed will prevent you from having to wear that mask. By all means, people, use that if you have a human rights commission in your province that has the same proviso that an accommodation for creed must be given. We do have that in Ontario. So whenever someone does say you have to wear a mask, no, I don't. Medical and religion, and stop talking to me. That's it. That's where it ends for me, and no one's ever argued beyond me saying those words. I haven't had to get into a fight or argue beyond those things. What I want to say here about the numbers you quoted, the numbers are a lie. What's happened here is that hospitals have stopped reporting deaths of pneumonia, emphysema, asthma, the flu. Everything is being listed as COVID. Now, here's the other thing to know about COVID-19 is that the test that they do only detects the DNA of COVID, all of them, not just 19. That's it. That's what it does. Test the DNA.
Absolutely.
You could have 17.5. You could have letter A. It wouldn't make a difference which one you have. The test will just say COVID, and everybody is going to panic.
Absolutely.
So I just want to finish this one thought here. Hospitals in Ontario, they are a business. They're not necessarily run by the province, but the administrators there are paid by the province to run them. And if they want more money, all they have to do is report a COVID death, and they get it.
Yep.
And that's the wool being pulled over your eyes. Go ahead, Barry.
I hate to cut you off, buddy. We are out of time. I have to let you go. But you know what? I'd love to have you back here in the very near future, because we only touched on a few things that I really wanted to talk to you about today, but we are out of time. I've got to thank you for coming in. Real quickly, where can people find you right now, Kevin?
Okay, here's the way it's going to work, everybody. I have a website which right now is just a single page. Because I can't work on it legally, you can go to it and you can donate to the campaign. It's my name, Kevin J. Johnston with a T .ca. That website is going to be updated very soon. As soon as we get these conditions lifted, you'll have access at that point to all my social media, which I will be very active on, and you'll have access to all my video channels and everything that I have to say. Because once the bans are on my speech are lifted, I intend to speak 10 hours a day, maybe more. So that's KevinJJohnston.ca, and you can email me directly from the website. Barry, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Hey, it's always a pleasure having you on, Kevin. And folks, get behind Kevin. He's worth getting behind, folks. I honestly feel that. He's one of few people in Canada that are really taking a stand. So put your money where your mouth is. Thanks for coming in, Kevin. It's been a pleasure. I'll be back, folks, in about 3 minutes. I'll be back, folks, in about 3 minutes with Doug Force. Hang around. Welcome back, second hour, and thanks again to Kevin Johnson for joining me. It was a great conversation. Look forward to having him back in the near future. Boy, what a... He's like another Roger Landry, the Duracell bunny man. You get him going, it's like, I don't get to talk, but that's okay because I brought him in here today, folks, for you to hear, and he's definitely a wealth of information. So thanks again, Kevin. I'm going to slow it down here the second hour. I'm going to try and slow down now that I don't have to keep up with Kevin. I got a little bit more of an individual in the Doug Force. I've had him in, I don't know how many shows we've done now, Doug, quite a few. But always a pleasure having Doug in, and definitely a little bit more mellow in the conversation. And welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure to be here yet again. It's always fun.
We seem to get ourselves sometimes going in the right direction, but sometimes we look at it a little bit differently. But it all comes back to the same point, it seems like. And that's why I kind of like having conversations with you. I get a lot of people in that, you know, they tend to stimulate conversation. I find that with you. And I know Steve, my producer, wants to get a few words in the second hour, so I think we'll let him join for a few minutes here and have a few comments. What do you think, Doug?
Absolutely. I love Steve. He's a great guy.
Okay. Well, then it's unanimous. But anyways, what's your... I know I haven't talked to you, what, in about 3 weeks now, maybe even longer, but... since we last talked, I mean, things have gotten a little bit crazier, but seems like in the last couple of weeks, things are really ramping up. Is that your observation too, Doug?
Oh boy, is it ever.
I thought that might stimulate a little conversation, but let's start with that. And tell me what you think.
Here's the big thing, right? They're trying to do the Great Reset. That's what they're talking about. It has nothing to do with this COVID-19. It has nothing to do, you know, all these new tests. Oh, well, the death rate has gone down to pretty much nothing from a virus that doesn't exist. And now they're testing by putting a swab up your nose and saying, oh, well, that tests for a virus. Well, viruses are all bloodborne. You can't do a swab up the nose for a virus test. That doesn't test for a virus. You have to do a blood test. And the way that they do these blood tests is they actually do two. The first one is for PCR. And what does PCR do? Well, it says, okay, there's the DNA for the specific virus that we're looking for is in the PCR test. And the only way they can tell if you got the virus is to do what they call a viral load test. And that's a second blood draw. And then, if you have a certain amount of the virus within your blood, it reaches what they call a viral load that says that you are basically infected. If it doesn't reach that particular bar, then you're not infected. And also with a viral load, it'll be able to distinguish between the virus and the antibodies. Okay, so if you have high antibodies, it means that you, even if you were exposed to the virus, you'd never get it again.
Right.
And so all of this stuff that they're now pushing on the people, they don't even deny this anymore. They're saying, we're testing for the coronavirus, not COVID-19. We're testing for the coronavirus. What's the coronavirus, Barry? Do you know what that is?
Everybody's got it, Doug.
it's the common cold.
I know. Steve wants to pipe in on this too, because Steve said the exact same thing that you said a few minutes ago, that this virus never was there. What they've done is just scam people beyond anything I've ever seen in my life, because people don't know what you just said, Doug. They don't get exposed to that kind of information at all. This is the biggest nothing burger ever played on the human race, bar none. But it's scary, because it really shows you the power of mainstream media, how they can manipulate the masses, period. And that's what scares me the most, the sheeple that are still being led along by the nose and believe that this thing is really out there, then it's a threat to them. People got to look at the numbers, Doug. They really got to look at the numbers. Go ahead.
And here's the thing. What they're actually looking for is something called SARS-CoV-2. That's what they claim is the virus. Now, in Switzerland, about 2 months ago, one of the top viral labs in the world took 3,000 samples from Italy from cadavers that died of COVID-19. 3,000 samples. Now, they had these samples for a number of months. They came out with a report about 2 months ago. In 3,000 samples, they didn't find SARS-CoV-2. Not at all. Wasn't there. Couldn't find it. Doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. it takes up to 2 years to locate a virus in the blood samples. So down in Stanford University came out with a study, 18,000 blood samples they went through. Same thing. Could not isolate SARS-CoV-2. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just takes a long time to go through, up to 2 years, before you actually will locate the virus. Because they have to isolate it and then find, okay, that's it there specifically. And so it takes a long time to isolate the virus. So I ask, so now they're producing these vaccines for what? If they haven't isolated the virus, how can you test for the virus? How do you do a viral load test? How do you do a PCR test if you haven't actually isolated the virus? What are they actually doing? What are they testing for? And what are these new vaccines that they're coming out, this mRNA vaccines that that Mr. Bill Gates, the eugenicist, is pushing on the world? Gee whiz, wasn't there a word that I just said there that should trigger you to go, wait a minute, there ain't no way I'm going to take this vaccine from a eugenicist. He wants to depopulate the planet.
You mean the guy that hung out with Jeffrey Epstein, that guy?
That's the one.
All the connections coming out now about him and Epstein, man, holy smokes. We wouldn't expect anything less, would we, Doug? Go ahead.
No, but and mRNA vaccines have been tested now, and they've been testing these things for like 20-plus years on animals. And so far, on all the tests, on all the animals over 20-plus years, they've had 100% failure rate on all of them. 100% failure. Now they want to start jabbing us with these mRNA vaccines that they have tried on animal tests that have 100% failure rate. They haven't tested it once on human beings, not one human test. Why? Because the animal tests have been a failure.
Doug. Okay, well, we'll use Nova Scotians first. That's what they said. It's insanity, Doug. I'm sorry for laughing. I shouldn't be laughing because it is insanity. It really is.
And Gates is now in the state saying, well, we're going to have a limited amount of viruses or limited amount of vaccines. So what we're going to do, we're going to start vaccinating the black population first. Wait a minute. You're a eugenicist.
You sound like a conspiracy theorist, Doug. I mean, you can't be telling us the truth here, man. You didn't tell us anything about this on TV, buddy. CBC would be reporting this kind of stuff. This is crazy.
I'm actually what you call a conspiracy factualist. and by the way, thank you, Mr. Rocco Galati. He's actually suing the CBC because it's taking public funds and it gives disinformation. Yep. And the Canadian Vaccine Choice Canada with Rocco Galati filed a lawsuit July the 6th against not only the federal Canadian government, but also the provincial government here in Ontario and the city of Toronto government, as well as the CBC.
163 filings, Doug, I understand.
Yeah.
Tell people a little bit about Rocco Galati. I'll let you tell them because the guy is something, folks. Listen to this.
Well, I met Rocco when he was doing the Comer final. I met him at the final press conference for the Comer lawsuit when they went to the Supreme Court of Canada. And the Supreme Court of Canada ruled against looking at the lawsuit, the Comer lawsuit. And they said it was a political thing and not of law. So they pushed it back out. And so I met Rocco at that particular press conference where he spoke for about an hour to the press that was all there. Very interesting. Really, really sharp guy when it comes to articulating what he was talking about with the Comer thing, and it was to do with the Bank of Canada. Anyways, after the interview was over, I was in his office having a chat with him for about 10 minutes after that. And we were at the point of doing The Myth is Canada as a documentary film back then. And I asked him if he wouldn't mind being interviewed for that. He gave me his business card. He said, call me when you want to do the interview. Now, Rocco, you got to understand something. Rocco is considered one of the top constitutional attorneys here in Canada. And a friend of mine who was with me asked Rocco, so what constitution are you an attorney for? Rocco just smiled.
Well, he is a very, very powerful and influential lawyer, and his success rate in court speaks for itself. And there's nothing better than seeing him go after the Canadian government right now, because the guy really does know his stuff. So kudos to him, and kudos to the vaccine group that hired him. We need this kind of stuff happening right now. Steve wanted to say something here.
Steve
wanted to make a comment. So we said we're going to let him make a comment. So, Steve, you've got the talking stick, buddy.
Yeah, Doug, I think this is a bit of a rhetorical question, so it doesn't really need any answer. But I would wonder what a lot of people might think about Canadians and Americans when they find out, or if they ever do find out, that the vaccination being worked on will never be tested on animals. They are going to go straight to human testing or human distribution.
Yes, they will.
that goes against all medical protocol from going back 2,000 years.
Well, some of the top doctors in the States have come out and spoke against exactly what you're saying right now, that this is unprecedented in medical history to have a vaccine come out and go directly to humans without at least 5 to 6 years of serious testing.
Uh-huh.
Folks, don't take the jab. It's coming from Bill Gates. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, and the other side, yeah, Bill Gates, the eugenicist. We must remember, he's a eugenicist. And now, not only is he saying, well, and even Fauci came out, but he says it's going to take 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5 vaccines to be protected against COVID-19. Now, COVID-19 is yet to exist. So what are they actually going to be, what are they going to put in this vaccine that's going to protect you from a virus that doesn't exist? What's going on here, ladies and gentlemen? Wake up.
If this doesn't get you answering or asking questions, folks, I really don't know what to say. That, you know, you have to look at the big picture of who's actually behind the World Health Organization. And that's something that people really have to understand, that the World Health Organization is being run by Communist China, that they had major influence in having the director of the World Health Organization put in place. Dr. Anthony, can you give me his last name there, Doug? That guy. No, the guy that's running the World Health Organization. The doctor that isn't a doctor. Dr. Anthony, what's his last name? Yeah, that's it. Okay. But anyways, you know, they're dictating to us how we're handling this disease, and this is coming from Communist China, and that's what people really have to understand. That's the bottom line. Communist China aren't our friends, folks. They want to destroy our civilization. They want to rule the world. You don't have to have an army to defeat a country. Go ahead.
Let me say something here. So let's look at the number one and the number two funders to WHO. The number one funder of WHO is the United States government. Number one. Who's number two?
Bill Gates. Nope. I'm not supposed to say that.
Bill Gates is number two. Exactly. Bill Gates and the and now, how much money does the communist government give the WHO? You know,
don't have those figures in front of me, but I know they contribute.
No, it's a very simple number: zero. They don't give anything.
Well, excuse me.
No, they don't. Because the WHO is a Western organization. This whole thing that Communist China and all this other stuff is a setup. I'm sorry to say, they're leading you by the nose in the wrong direction. They're leading you away from who's actually behind all of this and why. The why is, and I got this information from a friend of mine who's a cardiologist in the U.S. He used to be one of the top cardiovascular surgeons in the U.S., but he's now an older gentleman, so he retired from surgery, and he's now just a cardiologist. And he said, Doug, you got to understand something. The vaccine, the big pharma, their patents for all their statin drugs and all these big money-making drugs, they're coming to an end this year, next year, and the year after. They'll be going all into the patents will end, and now they don't have anything in the pipeline that's going to take over to make them money. So what's the next best thing? Well, vaccines, of course. So Pfizer and all these big vaccine company or big pharma companies that were making billions selling ADHD drugs and to children and so forth, along with the statins for the blood clotting and or I'm sorry for the bad cholesterol in your blood and so forth, their patents are all coming up. They're ending. All of these hundreds of billions of dollars that they make selling these mainstream drugs are going to go away. So what are they going to do? Well, they have to. So they lobbied the U.S. government to give them immunity, 100% immunity, if these vaccines kill you or turn you into a toad or. They don't have any. They get to keep all the profits. And in the U.S., guess who pays for the damages? Up to, what is it? I think it's up to $250,000. It's on the taxpayer. That's it. That's what you get. Your child turned into a toad because he took the vaccine. You get $250,000. Thank you very much. Now get the heck out of the room.
Well, vaccines are safe and effective, Doug. That's why the Vaccine Injury Compensation Board in the States has paid out approximately $6 billion in the last 9 years or 8 years.
That comes from taxpayer money. That comes from taxpayer money, Barry.
Well, but actually, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Board, every vaccine, every prescription drug that is sold on the market today, a couple pennies are taken off every prescription and sent to the Vaccine Injury Compensation Board. And if you're injured, they will settle with you as long as you sign a gag order. And that's been going on for a long time. The vaccine companies and the big drug companies have total exemption from any prosecution. That was set up, of course, through the back doors of the FDA and the CDC. All the money-making deals that were made to make these companies exempt were put in place. It's a tragedy that's going on, Doug. It really is. It's got to be called out. Well, CDC, now I read this, and maybe you could add to this, Doug, that I read that the CDC actually holds patents on 20 different vaccines. And last year, their profits from vaccines, and I went to two sources. I'm trying to make sure that this is correct. They made $4.5 billion last year on vaccines. The CDC, which is supposed to be an independent agency. Am I not correct?
Well, it's supposed to be.
Yeah, right.
Dr. Fauci.
Not in this world. Go ahead.
Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates share ownership on patents on this vaccines that's coming out for COVID-19. So, of course, they're going to have a monetary want and desire to push these vaccines. They make money from it. And, they don't want you to be able to sue them because, oh, my God, how dare you sue us when we try to, well, eliminate you from the planet. Because you're not smart enough to realize we're eugenicists and we're trying to depopulate the planet.
Say, it's Barry.
Like, what's your...
Doug.
Well, you know, we could add to that, Doug, that, you know, vaccines are just one of the tools they're using. They're using all kinds of the tools to get rid of us, man. We're being slow killed, but now it's accelerating, man.
Hey, Barry.
Like, we're really turning up the water in the pot, and the toads are starting to jump out, man.
Barry.
Yeah.
You know what the worldwide pharmaceutical profits were in 2018?
I could take a guess. Probably in around $500 billion, I believe.
No, it was over $1 trillion. Worldwide pharmaceutical. That's what they have at stake. $1.05 trillion. That was 2018 numbers.
That $500 billion is what they made on antidepressants in 2000. Because I did read that list. Okay, antidepressants alone, that's what they made on that. Steve, combined, you're right. It's over $1 trillion.
Yeah, so there's a very big incentive to get to get you to take this untested vaccine for a virus that supposedly has a 99.3 survival rate. 99.3 survival rate. Well, the flu this year had an 87% survival rate.
Mm-hmm.
this COVID-19 is 99.3. Well, we better shut the world down.
Black plague, buddy. The only virus we have in our society today, gentlemen, is the fear virus. And we've got to get it out of society. We do. And people are starting to ask a lot of questions. Why? You know, up in the north here, you know, people are still wearing masks. And I'm going, like, you know, there hasn't been a case up here now in 3 weeks. The hospitals haven't had a case in the hospital in 3 weeks. And yet, they're still going through all this crap. Now we hear from Walmart, Doug, that they're going to make everybody wear a mask going into Walmart. You think their business is going to drop a little bit?
I don't go to Walmart, so I wouldn't know.
And I don't either, Doug, but I'm telling you, everybody I've talked to, they're talking about this, and they're going, you know what? I'm never going to go back to Walmart again. So let's see what happens over there. But then this is the company that puts out pornographic dolls on their shelves. You hear about that, Doug?
Yeah.
Something that just shocked me to death. But in the same muscle, it didn't, because they're trolls, and they're coming from China. Imagine that.
Well,
how'd that sneak through? Go ahead.
You got to understand something. A lot of the stuff that comes in from China isn't made by the Chinese, or it's made by the Chinese, but it's not. The manufacturing isn't owned by the Chinese. All of these manufacturings, for example, you own an iPhone. That's made in China, by the way. But it's not owned by the Chinese. It's made in China by Chinese workers,
right?
Who owns Apple? It's on the NASDAQ. So right. it's an American company. And it's the same thing with Samsung. And it's the same thing with your television sets. It's the same thing. If you go buy a plastic container with a lid on it, at Canadian Tire, it's made in China. But it's not necessarily made by a Chinese company. There was a news article a while back where they said this Chinese company was going into Zimbabwe to do facial recognition in Zimbabwe. And how horrible these Chinese people are going to be, because they're going to perfect their facial recognition in Zimbabwe on black people and then take it back to China and use it. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Zimbabwe, yes, there's black people there. It's wonderful. But in China, there might be 3 black people in 7.8 billion people. So why would they do this? So when you peel the onion back, it turns out that the company was created by 2 companies in the United States that do facial recognition in big cities like Baltimore, Philadelphia, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. And they created this Chinese company, hired a bunch of Chinese people to go ahead and do this so that they would come out, oh, look, they're a bunch of racists over in America. No. And the company was 100% owned by these 2 American companies. And so you got to peel the onion when you start talking about this stuff and find out who is really behind it. Because, yeah, sure, the Chinese make the stuff. They're the manufacturers. Are they the owners? Well, that's the big question now, isn't it? A lot of the big pharma companies manufacture their drugs in China. So,
I read that 80% of our prescription drugs are now being manufactured in China.
Exactly, but they're not owned by the Chinese. The big pharma owns those companies that are doing it. The manufacturing is done in China for the labor cost, because it's very low labor cost.
Well, that's been going on for years. American companies going to China for low labor costs, Doug. So I'm
not only American. It's also German companies. It's also Canadian companies. It's all companies in the Western world have been using China, India. I can't remember the other one over there. But Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, et cetera, just to get the labor costs down. They pay pennies an hour.
Right.
So you've got to be careful. I mean, it's one. Look, Barry, I'm not a big fan of China myself, but I also am not a big China basher, because when you peel the onion, it's not saying that they're innocent, because they're not. They do all kinds of other things, but be careful in pointing the finger at them, because they're not always complicit. They're complicit on some things, but they're not always complicit on the other stuff. And it's done for a reason. It's done so that you're not paying attention to the real actual culprit.
Interesting thought. And I'll take the heart. No, that's an interesting thought. I'm going to shift gears here for a second. I want your thoughts on Melbourne right now and what's going on over there, Doug.
Oh, God, I just feel so sorry for those people. They took their guns away many years ago now, and now they have no way to defend themselves. And so that now they're at the behest of their tyrannical government.
Yep.
They did the gun grab. That's what they did. When was that? About 10, 15 years ago now?
Yeah, it was about 10 years ago they really clamped down. If you want to get a gun in Australia right now, it's almost
impossible.
You can, or you, I believe you still can, but you've got to go through loophole after loophole. Almost impossible now to get a firearm. I believe, no, I talked to one person down there, and they said that you can still do it, Doug, but what they put you through, that 99% of the population will not go through it. So they made it virtually impossible to defend yourself in Australia, and guess what happened, folks? Go ahead, Doug.
Tyranny. Welcome to it. Turn in your guns. They're very nice. Thank you very much. And here's $1,000 for your gun. Have a nice day. A year later, oh, my God, where's my gun? These guys are turning into tyrants. And they did.
And well, imagine Justin Trudeau coming out and grabbing our guns. Nothing to see there, eh, Doug?
Nope, nothing to see there.
You don't think the same scenario, folks? If you don't think the same scenario is going to play out in Canada, you really – I'll sell you a bridge in – oh, maybe New York City. I've got a couple of them. Maybe Los Angeles. Because whatever happens there is going to happen here. This full-blown martial lockdown of Melbourne right now and the Victorian state will come here. It's inevitable because they're all playing out of the same playbook, Doug, period. We've really got to speak against this, my friend.
And it's sad that they would – and it's all based on a fake virus. There's no virus. It's fake. And by the way, you know how you catch a virus? They're bloodborne. So how do you catch one? They're not airborne. No viruses are airborne. So why would you wear a mask if it's not airborne? Why would you wear a mask? Well, because it's compliant. Because it's control. That's why you wear the mask.
The World Health Organization folks came out and completely reversed their original statements on this scamdemic, stating that as a systematically, it was almost virtually impossible to pass this virus from person to person. In other words, if you're not out in society, if you're out in society and your nose is sniffling and you've got this so-called virus in your body, you can transmit it to another person. But if you're not showing signs of sickness, the chances, and this is right from the World Health Organization, why is this not being reported on mainstream TV? Doug, here's what I'm telling you here, came from the World Health Organization, that it's virtually all this social distancing, all this mask wearing is totally unnecessary.
Well,
and right from the World Health Organization. So what am I being misled here? I'm sure you've read that.
Well, I've got a headline for you. So on Tuesday, August the 4th, 2020, WHO admits no direct evidence masks prevent viral infection.
Exactly. That was one of the things. That was one of the statements that came out with, but the other one is it just came to my attention a couple of days ago, Doug, and I'm chasing it down. But they're telling us now that unless you're sick with this in society, that the chances of transmitting it to another person are virtually, you know, they're just not there. So we've gone to all these extreme measures for no reason. This thing is no worse than a flu virus. And I've looked at the numbers for the seasonal flu in Canada, and I've looked at the numbers for COVID-19, and they're identical, with the exception that the flu is actually a little bit worse, Doug. The 2009 flu virus in Canada has got identical numbers to these numbers that we're seeing from COVID-19, only they're a little bit higher. So what the hell's going on, folks?
Well, and the numbers on COVID-19 are this. The guy got hit by a bus.
Exactly.
He died of COVID-19.
Exactly.
The motorcyclist that died on the highway in Florida died of COVID-19. The Italian government came out and they said one day they came out with 800 deaths from COVID-19 in one day. It was the largest number. Remember this. This was a couple of months ago. 800 deaths in one day of COVID-19. They readjusted the numbers the next day to two.
Whoops. Somebody paid him a lot of money to get those numbers out there, Doug.
Yeah, but that 800 was headline news. Two was the back page of the newspaper, a little tiny column at the very bottom of the last page of the newspaper. I mean, it's just horrid how and it has nothing to do with protecting your health. It has everything to do with enslaving you, for lack of a better term.
Total enslavement. Come
Doug, on. Barry.
Yeah.
Doug, have you done the little Google test with the coronavirus, COVID-19?
Yeah, I've read about how to do that, and it's kind of interesting. You can Google like 822, that's the number that comes up on Google.
Yeah, well, I've done that with my cell phone, and you can do it with a computer too, because I just did it with the. With the computer, you can type in any three numbers you want and then put new cases afterwards. And that's what comes up. 753 new cases, coronavirus. San Bernardino, 8 new deaths. Record 753 new COVID cases reported. And, you know, I could go in and change the numbers, and it works for any three numbers that you want. 952.
It's funny you were talking about Italy there, Doug, a minute ago, about the 800 deaths they reported in one day. That was 2 days after the World Health Organization came out declaring this a worldwide pandemic. It's funny how they really put the shock value into society the first week to get everybody just trembling in their boots and running for the hills.
Well, and I live here in Toronto, and I walk down the streets, and it's beautiful outside. I was down at my storage locker yesterday, and a fella pulled up in his SUV, and he says, "Oh, you're parked in front of my storage locker. Do you mind moving?" I said, "Sure." I said, "But can I ask you a quick question?" He says, "What's that?" And I says, "It's 95 degrees out. Why are you wearing a mask?"
And? And?
Nothing. And exactly nothing. He just looked at me, gave me a hard stare, and turned away.
Well, you know, in my opinion, folks, we should be right now taking off your mask. Everybody that's been compelled to wear one of these by their employers should be going down to see a lawyer tomorrow and suing their butts, because what you're doing to your body is so detrimental. And I've read a lot of reports on it, Doug. It's insanity to recycle your own air. We're not designed to do that. These masks are totally efficient anyways, unless you're wearing a really good mask. 70% of the air is bypassing the outside of that mask, that you're doing absolutely nothing to stop a virus that's so small that the mask couldn't stop it if it did run up against it. And yet, here we are. The virus has just about gone away, and municipalities all over the country are mandating that you wear a mask. What the heck, folks? Can't they? Well, I mean, I'm not a smart guy, Doug, but I can figure this out. Go ahead.
No, but I love how you said the virus has just about gone away, and I'm going to say, what virus are you talking about there, Barry?
The virus that was supposed to be here, okay? The numbers, they don't have any numbers right now to support what they're trying to keep going. They have nothing to support the fear virus anymore. It's disappearing, and people are realizing it.
Here's the other thing. Actually, there was this is August, so in July, there was 7 cases of lung mold in Toronto hospitals, 7 cases of lung mold caused by these masks. Now that came out on the mainstream media, and you haven't heard a single peep about lung mold again at all anywhere. That got pulled off the media so quickly because this mold that grows in the mask, you're inhaling it down into your lungs, and the mold starts to eat your lung alveoli. And it kills you.
Yeah, you know, I should pull up the list of effects that it has on your body, because I've read them, Stephen. I don't have, or Doug, and I don't have the kind of brain that can pull them all up right now.
Do you know what a pleurisy is, Barry?
Pleurisy, yeah.
I've actually had a pleurisy.
Hypoxia, it affects your bodies in ways that some of it can be it can be permanent.
I've actually had a pleurisy, Barry.
Yeah. Huh?
I've actually had a pleurisy back in 1985. I wanted to die.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a weaker form of pneumonia, but it doesn't seem like that.
No, it's not. it's not at all.
Did you know that? Here's a funny thing. So pneumonia is a bacteria, as is pleurisy, not viruses. But there's now a new pneumonia that's coming into the system, and it's been around. I shouldn't say new. It's been around for a couple of years. It's called fast pneumonia. In other words, the bacteria that cause the long-term pneumonia, the pneumonia that might take you 2 or 3 months to die from, all the drugs they give you for combating that pneumonia don't work on fast pneumonia. And you catch fast pneumonia, and usually within 3 to 7 days, you're dead. That's how quickly it kills you. A lot of the deaths that were being caused that in the beginning during the flu epidemic and so forth in this virus epidemic, they were from fast pneumonia. Those people coming into the hospital were putting on these, I can't remember.
Respirators.
Respirators, thank you. I was going to call them incubators for some reason. Respirators. They were being put on that. That accelerated the bacteria to kill you. So they were killing people. They were literally killing people by putting them on the respirator.
Wow.
And they called it death from COVID-19.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about this, Doug, but I'm not fully informed on it. So thanks for bringing me up to snuff on that. Somebody else was telling me about this, and it's funny how they coordinate things to support their agenda, you know? It's like, okay, we do this, that we can call that, we can call this that. The numbers have been fudged across the board since this began, and like you said, the virus is a nothing burger. It is absolutely nothing for society to fear. In British Columbia, Doug, we've lost one person under the age of 49 years of age that they can attribute to coronavirus, apparently, since this thing started. One person. And we got a population here of 4.5 million people. No children have been affected. We shut our schools down. Summer camps are all shut down. People are going nuts, destroying our families, buddy. Go ahead.
No, I was reading earlier today. I can't remember whether it was on Zero Hedge or... hang on a minute. Let's see if I can't actually find the article. 7-year-old child died of COVID-19 in the U.S. He was, I think it was Charlotte, North Carolina. And you read the article, and the government actually says, well, your kid was under 7, and he died of COVID-19, and there was no other extenuating circumstances. He just died of COVID-19. And then you read down, and then it says, he had an epileptic seizure in his shower and bashed his head and died, but he tested positive for COVID-19.
Anything to perpetrate the agenda, eh? And now the new wave's coming. The second wave's coming. They told us all about it, Doug, so get ready. They're not going to stop, man. They will never stop now, Doug. Never. Until we stop them.
Well, we're going to have to stop. And I think the further this goes... and this is for Steve. You're down in Michigan. The further this goes, I think, as you're getting closer and closer to the election. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in the United States, Donald Trump is going to be your next president, by the way.
What? No Hillary Clinton? why isn't she in jail yet, Steve? Well, I hear it all the time, and I hear it all the time.
I don't run anything, that's why.
I know, but I've been hearing it for months and months and months that the hammer's coming down, but I'm not seeing it yet. I hear rumors all the time. Boy, I'll tell you.
Well, the hammer is coming down. It's coming down on us.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's going to happen is that when Donald Trump gets reelected in November, I think you're going to have a civil war. Honestly, I think that the Patriots, that you're going to get these Antifa guys and these Black Lives Matter guys, and then the other libtards, for lack of a better term, coming out with their baseball bats and their
dildos,
Molotov cocktails. Yeah, their dildos, their Molotov cocktails, and then the Patriots are going to come out with their 50 caliber machine guns, and it's going to be a very good purge. You know, like the movie Purge, it's going to be a very good purge because in a couple of days, all the libtards will be gone. And America will be back under its constitution with the right kind of people.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Well, I can't say I want to see that happen because a lot of people die, but I would love to see that happen, guys. So it's either that or we're going to lose it, guys.
You can't say you'd like to see it happen. Like, you'd love to see it happen.
I'm sitting here. Buddy Doug comes over every Sunday, and he sits here and plays poker while I'm talking on my radio show. So here, say hi to Dan.
We've been prepping for it.
Hi, Dan.
Hello, Dan. There are a few people that listen to my insanity, so I appreciate that. Gives me some place to vent. Okay, I know I call you once in a while, Doug, when I want to vent. and you lend me an ear, so I appreciate that, because there's days that I have to vent, man, because I see what's going on. And I tell you, man, it is beyond insanity. It really is. And the thing is, we see it ramping up worldwide, that chaos just seems to be the order of the day. No matter where we look right now, it seems to be amping. It just seems to be growing in leaps and bounds. The South China Sea right now, Doug, should be of a concern to everybody, because they're at a tipping point right now. They're all pointing guns at each other, and they're loaded, and they're ready to pull the trigger. And the thing is, that scares me is that these guys have got nuclear bombs, buddy, and that could really ruin our day.
Well, and I guarantee you this. The Americans know that the Chinese can take out their entire fleets. They know that. The technology was transferred to the Chinese by the Russians a few years ago. The Chinese actually took that tech and made it even better. The range that the Russians, it's called a Sunburn missile. The Sunburn missile had a range of 400 kilometers, and it took two Sunburn missiles to bring down a supercarrier. Today, the Chinese have a new missile that has a 1,300 kilometer range, and it takes one to sink a supercarrier to the bottom of the ocean. And the only way that they know these missiles are coming in is if they open the door and look, because they're not on the Aegis system. It doesn't pick them up at all. These things fly at hypermach, nine times the speed of sound. And they hit, and they... And the Americans know that. They know that the Chinese have got that. They know the Russians have got it. They're over there saber-rattling, because they know that if they actually fire a shot, they've got a whole brand-new submarine fleet. And it won't be ones that... It will blow up on them back home, because all of the crews on all of those vessels will be lost at sea. And that would be a very sad thing to have happen to the families back in America. Knowing full well that the Pentagon knew about these weapons. This is no secret. You go on YouTube, you can actually see the Chinese doing the tests on these weapons. You can see the Russians doing the tests on these weapons. They actually do exist. And can you imagine the American families who have lost their loved ones? 5,000 souls on a supercarrier. 5,000 gone in seconds.
Well, then, of course, it would escalate to nuclear war, Doug. We do not want to see that happen. I'm aware of these hyper missiles. I've also had a chat with my gentleman down south that's quite aware of them, and we had a chat about this about 2 weeks ago. And he said to me, he says, you know, the Chinese have these missiles, but if you think right now that the Americans haven't come up with some form of defense against that, I don't know if they do or not, but I believe that they must have maybe in very short period of time, because my buddy believes that they have it. Maybe they don't, Doug. Maybe these are something they can't stop, and maybe you're correct about that. I don't have all that information, but I know they're out there, and they're an incredibly dangerous weapon, incredibly dangerous.
The American tech on missile defense systems, okay? For example, let's look at the Patriot missile system, okay? It has, 97% failure rate.
Yep.
In other words, if you shoot 100 missiles, it'll take out three.
Yep.
Iron Dome, which Israel, it took the Patriot missile system, and they created Iron Dome from it. So they upgraded it all, and now it has a 75% failure rate. In other words, 25% of the missiles get through. So if you are, 75% of the missiles get through. So even Iron Dome, if you send 100 missiles into Jerusalem, for example, 75 will get through, 25, they'll be stopped by Iron Dome. Now, the Iron Dome missiles, the Arrow missile that is created, is worth $1 million. So it's $1 million a pop. So $25 million to take out. And I thought it was funny. The missiles that the Hezbollah and so forth shoot at them are worth about $5,000. You can bankrupt Israel just by shooting missiles. But it's fun, and it's funny. But when you look at the Aegis system, this is the Aegis system that is supposed to protect the fleet as it goes through, and they actually can't even see the missiles coming. they're going so fast that they don't even show up on their radar systems. And there's no defense against that.
Well, there's something that we do have to keep in mind, Doug, and I'm listening to what you're saying right now, and we have to keep in mind that technology, and I believe this, I could say this, and I don't think you'd be able to disagree with me, that the technology that the United States has right now is probably anywhere from 10 to 20 years ahead of what we know about. That being said, I believe they possibly could have a technology in the form of either a frequency weapon, which will, what they've developed with frequency weapons, I'm sure you're aware of it, have an incredible ability to distort and destroy anything coming direct in at any speed. And that's one of the things that I believe they might have something in their toolbox. I'm just saying their technology is way ahead of what we know, Doug, so we really don't directed know if they do or they don't, but we can speculate. And yep, speculating, that being said, there's a good possibility they do have a defense for this that we don't know about.
Directed energy weapons.
Just my thought.
Directed energy weapons.
Directed energy and frequency and, you know, laser. Like I said, if they have technology, well, if they have technology that's that far ahead, if they do, we don't really know. They could have some pretty cool toys in their toy box. Go ahead. Okay.
So let's see. Directed energy means you have to have a target to shoot at. Lasers, you need a target to shoot at. If their radar system, the Aegis radar system, cannot see the missile coming, how do the directed energy weapons point at what? How does the laser point at what? If you don't have a target to shoot at, what are you shooting at?
Good question. Yeah,
that's just it. So, yes, they may have this technology, but without actually being able to see the thing coming, it's useless. It'll go down with the ship.
But you know what? In the same muscle, buddy, maybe they do have this and we just don't know about it, okay? That's a real possibility. I'm saying it's a possibility. Okay?
Yeah, even the Pentagon admits that the Russians are 10 years ahead of them in hypersonic weapons. They're 10 years ahead in hypersonic weapons. And that means that by the time the Americans get to where the Russians are today, the Russians will be another 10 years ahead. The Russians actually now have the ability to see hypersonic weapons coming in. They actually have defense against hypersonic weapons that they're testing now. They don't have it up and running yet, but they're actually testing it. Where are the Americans along with hypersonic weapons defense? They're not even out of the door.
Well, we're living in a Star Trek world, so we really don't know, but it's interesting having these conversations, Doug, because, you know, we really don't know at all, but we...
No, and I don't think anybody does, to be honest with you. I don't think even the top general at the Pentagon knows, or the top 10 generals know, because it would be very prioritized information to be given. I mean, you have to be very careful with this kind of information and who gets it and who doesn't get it. And they'll leak stuff that they know they can't produce for at least 25 or 30 more years, but they'll leak it out to the press and go, oh, look how far we are advanced. And the reality is that they're not even close to that. It's the stuff like with AI. Everybody's talking, oh, AI. Oh, they're 100 years away from actually having a machine think on its own. It's all AI today is just code. That's it. And what you're looking for when you're looking at AI is a machine that thinks. Okay? It's not right that doesn't have its code written, but it's thinking. It's like the human brain. They still haven't figured out how that works. And they're still scratching their head as how do people think? How can we take the way a person thinks and put it into a machine? Because there is no code for that. Your brain isn't all code. You actually think through the synapses and so forth, and chemical, whatever it is in the brain. But they haven't figured that out. So AI. I mean, I knew a guy from Russia who was emigrated to Canada years ago now, with his wife and his kid, and he was one of the top guys in universities over there for AI. And we had chatted about this and how far, because he was working here in Canada with one of the universities. He got big grants and stuff for this. And he said, yeah, Doug, we're at least can't. We're 100 years away, at least 100 years away, from getting anywhere close to having a machine think on its own.
Well, I hope you're right, because this kind of stuff is I have a hard time dealing with rotary phones, and this stuff is way beyond me. But, you know, in actuality, Doug, we have the most incredible computer in the whole world inside our bodies right now, and it's called the endocannabinoid signaling system. And what medical science has found out about that in the last couple of years, well, it's a travesty they're holding that back from society. It really is. Next Sunday, I have Dr. David Allen joining me. And he was one of the, if not the top heart surgeon in California for years. Yeah. And he got out of that to become a cannabis, a spokesman for cannabis. And he's going to join me next week, and he's going to try and explain to people how significant this system is to the body. It's a miracle. And we don't need anything else but to support that system. Doug, would you agree with me?
I do. And we also have this other wonderful system that supposedly stopped working on March the 1st, 2020. It's called the human immune system.
Yeah, they flipped the switch, buddy.
What? We don't have an immune system anymore? Oh, my God.
Well, don't worry about it. Wearing that mask will protect you against any bacteria. Wait a second. You're telling me my immune system needs bacteria? So it stays healthy and strong. Yep. And if I deprive my immune system of that bacteria when I go outside, I'm going to get really sick. Well, yep. Well, that might just play into their agenda, wouldn't it? I mean, come on. One last thing before we go. Chinese troops landing in Australia. What do you think of that? Because I'm hearing tons of information about it, and some of it sounds like it's the real deal. What do you think, Doug?
Well, you got Chinese troops just up the road from you.
I heard.
Yeah.
Good.
What's that big port up there? Port Alberni, that's on the island. Where Kitimat is. And you're in Terrace, so what's the big port?
I've actually
put the pipeline through.
Huh?
Where the Queen Charlotte is. Prince Rupert. Thank you very much. It's been a long time since I did. They supposedly have Chinese troops. People actually saw Chinese troops up in Prince Rupert guarding some construction that they were doing up there.
I've heard the same reports, and I've also heard of a film of, and I can't verify it. I've asked for proof on it. I'm looking for verification of Chinese troops in another rural area, and it was up on northern British Columbia, up around the Stikine area. Of Chinese troops in the bush practicing an exercise. I'm trying to find out if it's true. I'm not going to say it is or not, but we know that their influence is growing in leaps and bounds in Canada. We've got to put a stop to that. Just like, unfortunately, Doug, we're going to have to put a stop to this show because we've run out of time. So I'm going to let you take a minute here, tell people where they can find you, and a few closing thoughts, and we'll have to finish the conversation till the next time we talk.
Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm Doug Force from The Myth Is Canada. You can contact us through our website, themythiscanada.ca or .com. I can be contacted directly at themythiscanada@yahoo.com. Come watch us on our roundtable events every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. with the people at the War Memorial in Ottawa. We kicked the ball around. As a matter of fact, last Wednesday, Barry was on with us. I'm hoping that maybe in the near future we can get him back and possibly talk Steve into coming and joining us.
Well, I know, Doug, we could have talked for another hour here because there's lots of things that I didn't even get to pick your brain on today. But we'll have to save it for another show. So thanks for coming in. It's always a pleasure chatting with you, my friend.
Yeah, it's always fun. Thank you for having me, Barry, and thank your audience for listening.
Okay, guys, well, that's it for this week. Thanks to Kevin Johnson for coming in. Thanks to Doug Force again for coming in. Always enjoy my conversations with these gentlemen. I hope we've brought a few things to your attention today. And it really is, like I said, time to get off the couch and get involved, folks, or else we could and we will lose this thing we call freedom. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back next week. Same time, same place. I do have a doctor coming next week. I urge you to tune in and have a listen to. He will blow your mind. I'll see you then. Bye for now.